Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialistly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Inside the evidence, behind the headlines, from someone who's been there. Here now, Jennifer Coffendaffer.
True crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendaffer. This case, the case involving Celeste Rivas and David Burke. It's something that from the beginning, from the very, it literally the day after that the impounded Tesla of David Burke was found, even though we didn't know at that point it was Celeste inside, this was something that just grabbed at me. Why? Because typically when vehicles are impounded and then a body is found inside, it's for a very specific reason, meaning it's typically because the person inside that vehicle, inside that trunk, or in this case, a frunk is what they're called, is missing. And our platform, both this platform as well as Twitter, X, what we really focus on in large part, and how I even became involved in X, thank you, Brian Hinton, for that, was because of Gabby Petito, who was missing. And, you know, when you look at the nationwide concern for Gabby Petito, the international concern, the not only concern, but how people became so involved in that case. And I don't know what it is about this case with Celeste, but from back long time ago when she went missing, which was April of 2024, from the point, you know, the moment we knew there was a body in David Burke's frunk, mainstream media and even social media barely paid attention. Nobody paid attention really until she was finally named. The autopsy report came out and named Celeste Rivas. And now I can already see this case just twittering out, just fizzing out in terms of the attention it's getting. And the other thing I've noticed, and we're going to talk through this, is a lot of misinformation, what I believe is misinformation. And I'm going to go over it. There are really two main points. But what I want to focus on tonight is keeping Celeste out there, her name, her face, because what happened in this situation is just really, really horrible. For those of you who don't know the case, and let me bring up, I think I have her missing poster here. Oh, I don't have her missing poster here. Shoot. What happened was Celeste, back in April of 2024, was reported missing. Now, she was only 13 years old, only 13 years old. So she was very young. She remained missing until her remains were found in the frunk of the vehicle owned by David Burke. David Burke, who is better known as the rapper, he goes by David, but he spells it really odd. He spells it D and then the number 4, VD. David. I'm going to call him Burke by his true last name, and I'm going to call Celeste by her first name. Now, the minute the name came out, that the remains found in this trunk, and remember, early on, this is really important to note, this car of Burke's, David Burke's, was in a neighborhood where a search warrant was later served very recently that we're going to get into. But the car had been there, everyone, for 3 weeks. I think it's really important to understand this, that this car was essentially, even though he had been using it according to neighbors, and what I am going to talk about today is what we know from law enforcement, what we can see with our own eyes, videos, photos, things like that, and what we know from witness statements. Okay, so we know David Burke's vehicle was in and around that house that law enforcement later searched for 3 weeks, everyone. There's a lot of misconception about that. I think it's very critical that that's pointed out, because this helps explain the state of decomposition of beautiful Celeste. And this is Los Angeles area, California. It's hot. And decomposition happens very rapidly when there's heat involved. When there's cold involved, then it happens much slower. But as heat is involved, the entire process is sped up. Not to get gross, but the bugs that end up, everything happens much faster. And so the fact that there were only minimal remains, I say minimal, it's comparatively compared to a full body, you know, her flesh would have been gone. You know, you're just talking literally bones, skull, hair, possibly fingernails. Everything was decomposed. But again, she was in this car for 3 weeks. Then finally, it gets towed, and that day was the 3rd. Okay, the 3rd. Then finally, as it sits on the lot for 5 days, everyone, 5 days, finally, on the 8th, the stench was too much. Workers started noticing it, and law enforcement discovered remains. Now, I want to get into a little bit of detail regarding the remains and the vehicle. This Tesla is, any Tesla has a, it can have, if it's a Y, certain, and I have Teslas, this is how I know this. It basically can have a trunk, which is on the backside, or a hatch. But in the front, there's actually what they call a frunk. That's what we call it. It's the front trunk. And that is where she was found. It is small, everyone. It's small. She was found decomposed and dismembered. Now, a lot of people are making a lot of this that are misinformed, meaning, and I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to explain, I think, the misinformation. They think it's, you know, oh, they went and chopped the person up because of their anger, or because this was, you know, this involved murder or something like that. People who are not formerly in law enforcement. People who are formerly in law enforcement and handled violent crime, homicides, they will tell you, and I'm going to tell you, because that's my background, I'm going to tell you that most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, dismemberment happens for convenience. In other words, you need to put a particular body in a bin, or you need to put a body scattered out so you won't get caught. You need to put it in a plastic bag. And if indeed her body was dismembered, as the reports say, I believe it was for one of these reasons. In other words, for her to be maintained, put in this frunk in a plastic bag, there wasn't any other way for her to fit. Because remember, particularly if somebody is murdered, and law enforcement has told us this is a homicide, if somebody is murdered within not long after that, they start to stiffen. They become very heavy. And if anybody has seen a Tesla frunk, it's small. So I very much believe that this was out of practicality that she was dismembered, not out of hate, if indeed she was dismembered again. We know she was, we believe she was found dismembered. So when you look at that, you have to also ask yourself, did this have something to do with the decay? You know, the way that it would look dismembered. That is not how it's been explained. So I do believe she was dismembered, but I believe it was for practical reasons, not out of anger or out of some, you know, Charles Manson type look-alike, act-alike case. So I think it's really important for people to understand that. Secondarily, let's talk about after she was found and kind of the fallout of that. After it was announced, really, that is when all of a sudden mainstream media started picking it up. Certainly, social media started running rampant. And in large part, not only because he is sort of famous, and, you know, I have been asking around my kids and then, you know, just friends, just anybody, have you ever heard of this person? And two of my three said they had heard of him, not necessarily listening to his music, but had certainly heard of him. And my younger son seemed to know more about him because he was able to describe his genre. And then I've asked various other people because that's what I do. I want to understand how famous he is. He's obviously somewhat famous because he's doing not only a U.S. tour, he's doing a world tour. People know him, but it seems to be very confined circles. Not a huge name. You know, he's no Taylor Swift. Sorry, I know a lot of you aren't Swifties. I'm not necessarily a Swiftie, but I think it's pretty cool she landed Kelsey. So anyway, all of that's beside the point. I wondered if this case might sort of gather more traction just based on the fact that he at least was somewhat known. But it never really did. And then lately, it's starting to, and again, I already see it dissipate. And I think that that is a terrible thing for Celeste, because justice needs to be served. And I think the more people that see the story, know about this story, see her face, know about the Tesla, see everything, there might be things that people know, remember, and can go forth and talk to law enforcement about. That's why it is so important, in my view. For many of you who followed the Gabby Petito case, you may know that the big break in that case was when individuals saw the white van on social media. And they didn't really realize what it meant, but they had recalled, because they were traveling through the Grand Tetons, they had recalled seeing a van on the side of the road, and they were able to tell authorities the area that van was in. I tell you, if that piece of information had never been seen, and those individuals didn't look back at photos and figure out, or video footage, I think it was, where they had seen that white van parked, I honestly think Brian Laundrie would be on to dating other girls, living in Florida, living with his mom, their mom, you know, working in the, you know, jambalaya juice shop, or at Publix where he was last working, which is a grocery store. I really don't know if it really would have been solved. I say that because from all accounts, you know, I believe she was murdered there near the grave. She was buried there. And the Grand Tetons is just too big. And there was very terrible coverage. Again, I'm not trying to digress. I'm trying to say, for me, why it is so important that these cases are seen, are in the news, are on your you know, platforms. It does not matter. I say this all the time. I don't care whether you have 10 followers or 100,000 or a million followers. Every time you post something, it proliferates. And all it takes is it proliferating to somebody like the Bethunes, that's the name of this couple, that pieced together what they had seen. And this is going to be one of these cases, I believe. Now, a lot of you might be saying, but Jen, Teslas have 9 cameras. They are such intelligent cars. And I'll agree with you on that. It is amazing how intelligent the Tesla is and how it's programmed. But you can disable those security features. When you go, there's basically a computer screen that is in front of the dash. So you've got the dash here, and then there's this computer screen. And on that, it's huge, really. You literally go into your car. I can see the drop-down menu. Again, I have this vehicle. And you just go down, it says safety, and then on safety, it specifically talks about whether you want to engage it or not, and whether you want to be prompted. In other words, if a camera shows something, do you want to be prompted on your phone that somebody's messing around with your car? And so many other safety features, but you can disable them. I don't know if that's what happened in this case. But for all of those thinking, wow, there's going to be a treasure trove of information, I think there's going to be a lot of information. There's going to be information about when that car parked, possibly when doors opened, possibly if the cameras and the safety system were enabled. Oh my gosh, we're going to see so much. But because there hasn't been an arrest, I have grave concern that indeed those features were possibly disabled. Now, that in and of itself can be really great information for law enforcement. The absence of evidence is evidence type theory. We saw it with the Idaho 4, where that murderer, he literally turned off his phone right in the window of these murders and the coming and going. So it looked terrible. So in this case, if he had his safety features enabled and then all of a sudden it was disabled, that's a problem. Now, as far as other evidence of their relationship, say, there was a video that came out and I posted it on X, a video of a teacher of Celeste. Now, remember, everyone, she was 13. She was in seventh grade. When I think of seventh grade, that's literally, obviously, one grade past seventh grade, but grade school-ish. Sixth grade, for most people, that's when grade school ends. And you're just barely, you know, taking the next step up to middle school. And there's a reason that seventh, eighth graders, and sometimes even ninth grade, where I went to school, is separated from high school. It's because they're still kids and they're naive and they need protected and they don't need to be around some of the adults, meaning the 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, shoot, in this day and age, 20, 21-year-olds that could be in their school still trying to finish up school. And I'm not trying to be judgmental there because I appreciate that people are trying to get their degrees, but that's the purpose of a middle school. She was seventh grade, everyone. I want to pull up a picture that I think probably closely, most closely kind of looks at her or shows her at that age. She was young. And in the video, I digressed a little bit. I'm getting back onto the teacher video. In that video, her teacher describes David Burke coming in there. He describes her. He has proof. He has photos that he saved with her against a particular place on the wall. Why did he save that? Well, I think he knew, probably working among kids this age, and David Burke was famous, if you will, well known amongst this age, that this was significant. Also, she was 13. You know, Burke was an adult. It's terrible. But that, I think, links us to at least their association in part. The mother of Celeste also says, listen, she was dating a guy named David. Now, she can't say that it was David Burke, but that's pretty coincidental that she was dating a guy named David. Some other things that really link them, there are a lot of pictures and videos with them together. One of the most telling videos, I think, it looks like they're in a kitchen and he's streaming and she's kind of got this hood on and you can just see kind of her eyes back there. I believe it to be her. And he's there and they're, you know, talking and so forth. And then at one point she says, oh my gosh, we got to get rid of this video, you know? And again, that goes back to the tattoos that also link them. They have these tattoos and I hopefully have one of these up here. I'm not sure if you can quite see it on that. I don't think you can, but that brings me to Hello Kitty too. But they have these tattoos that say, shh. Now, there could be a lot of people with shh tattoos, but the significance, of course, of shh is we're secret because you're freaking 13 years old. You're 13. So very significant they have those dual tattoos. I want to talk about the Hello Kitty. The reason Hello Kitty is so important is her parents have specifically said that she was a Hello Kitty fan. She liked that memorabilia. She liked the trinkets. And then look at him. Come on. I mean, to me, this was just grooming. I mean, maybe because he was a singer and he was already famous, he didn't really need to do much grooming. You know, she could have been attracted to him, but certainly I think the Hello Kitty from a law enforcement perspective, if I'm the agent assigned to this case, this is important evidence for me to show the link and to show the nexus between them. So the Hello Kitty, the David, the classroom, the tattoos, the videos, the photos. There is a lot there to link David Burke to Celeste. And remember, at the age of 13, that is statutory rape if they were involved physically. And that's going to be a problem for law enforcement to prove because it's difficult to get in the bedroom. So you can bet they're going to be looking at all the devices, between the two, they're going to be interviewing all of her girlfriends. Remember, one of the most difficult parts of this case, and this is so a big reason why it's taking a while. One of the most difficult parts for law enforcement is this time frame. April of 2024, where somebody is off the grid. Well, I don't think she's really off the grid. She's on David Burke's grid. You know, she's missing, but she's really not missing. But the problem is the people who know where she is and know she's missing, because I do believe they know she's missing. They're keeping everything within a certain circle. And I mean, there's this picture where she is actually in the black shirt. Is it this one? Ooh, that might be it. That's on the wanted poster. And apologies, I really thought I had that wanted poster right up here, but I don't. I think it's the middle picture of her. I think it's this particular shirt. Let me make sure. No, I think it was this particular shirt. Don't hold me to it, but you can look at the wanted poster. I have everything posted on my X. But come on. People knew she was missing. And they knew where she was. And that is how these young girls remained groomed, taken care of, exploited. They're 13. There's a reason that 13 is considered statutory rape. There's a reason for that. I want to make sure I didn't miss. I'll go back and look on any other sort of nexuses, but I want to talk about really quick the issues with false information. These are big. First of all, I want to talk about if she was pregnant. I understand the chat. I read the chat, you know, somebody saying that they were David Burke and then now it's gone. And could that be him? Listen. And then a baby or a fetus supposedly being found, you know, in and around the area where he was hanging. I understand all of that. But there is no way any of us can definitively say that was his account. And for me, even though I like to look at everything and consider everything, and I put a lot of things out there because investigators are going to look at that. They're going to look at that chat and they're going to look and see if somebody came on with that name. They're going to look at the, you know, digital footprint to see if it really tracked to him, blah, blah. But that is something that we cannot definitively say. We just can't until forensics are done on that. So to say, to extrapolate that there was a baby, that she was pregnant, that's why she was killed. Now, believe me, we know in a lot of cases that when an individual who's a minor, I'll take the obvious case of Stephen Stearns and Madeline Soto. You know, Stephen Stearns abused Madeline Soto from at least the age of 11. I think it really went back earlier. And a lot of people tried to say, oh, well, see, she must have been pregnant. Well, that ended up being not true. And so I take this case to say that could be the same thing happening here. It's just really unfair to say that that is the reason or that's what happened. Now, will we find out? Maybe later that was the reason, maybe. But right now, for me, it's just way too premature to put that out there without any information from the medical examiner, without any information that's been corroborated through law enforcement, and really just with sort of online sleuthing, which could end up being true. You know, I was on News Nation the other night, and Natasha asked me, what do I think of sleuths? And I always say, I have so much respect for sleuths. I work with a lot of sleuths. I'm just, really respect the ones that are good, meaning they're not only good at what they do, but their heart is good and they know to be careful with information. Sometimes they'll send it to me and say, what do you think? And, you know, and I'll always say, just be really careful of who you're hurting when you really don't know if it's actually true. So I'm just going to put that out there that I know for a fact there is no credible information at this point from law enforcement that she was pregnant or that a fetus or, you know, partial baby or miscarried child or aborted child was found related to her. Like I said, if it ends up being true, you know, then we'll look back and we'll say, law enforcement said it and it's true, but I think it's just too premature. The other one is about Celeste. This new Celeste, she's purportedly 23 years old. I actually have a picture of her, but I'm not going to put it up because she has said, this is not me. I think they had one interaction long ago. I want to say January 25. And she said, we don't have anything going on, but SLUs have sort of intertwined a interaction, I think, to say that he now has somebody named Celeste to prop up as kind of the shell game. It really wasn't the 13-year-old Celeste I was involved with or writing music about. It was really the 23-year-old Celeste. Again, for me, I think it's extrapolation. And what all I can do is go with what she is saying. And that is pretty much, leave me alone. Don't get me caught up in this. If law enforcement ferrets out that there was a relationship, is relationship going on, then they ferret that out. But right now, that's one of these, you know, sleuth facts that I'm just not comfortable embracing or backing at this point. If it ends up being true, then that's great. But I just want to be really careful because this case, everyone, is so, so sad. But I want to get back to facts now. Kind of went through the, you know, what I don't know to be facts, those two points. And I want to move on to a couple other things we know to be facts. We know, seen the photos, we know law enforcement served a search warrant at the residence where he, David Burke, was known to reside and be at. Now, what they were looking for, according to multiple outlets who have sources within law enforcement, they were looking for, obviously, indicia of a crime, of this crime. Blood, hair, probably took all those drains apart. They're looking for any spatter. They want to luminol. They want to see if anything happened at that location. Papers, electronics. You know, I would bet that if indeed David Burke, and remember, he hasn't even been charged, if he is involved in this, he's not some mastermind criminal. I mean, he's done so many stupid things already. You know, that song, Romantic Homicide, that lyric that could be used against him, you know, covering up a relationship with a 13-year-old. So you write a song about him, those streams that I've seen, photos, the Hello Kitty stuff, the tattoos. I mean, he has painted himself minimally as a pedophile. That's what he's painted himself as. Is he a murderer? I think we're going to find out. I think law enforcement will be able to make this case because he's not a mastermind. Is his DNA likely going to be all over that car, in the frunk, in the car, on the hood, everywhere? Yes. But is he going to be able to have an explanation for that? Yes, and law enforcement realizes this. They realize that this is tricky. They realize that if they don't have that amazing Tesla information, that they're going to have to look for other information. You know, the fingerprints. I was thinking there'd have to be fingerprints on that front, because when you close it, there's likely fingerprints there. But again, that can be explained away. But this will be one of those cases that it'll be the totality. Cameras in and around that neighborhood, I think, are going to be critical, because they're looking at camera information 3 weeks out. Remember, people were complaining about this vehicle. That's how it got towed, an abandoned vehicle in their neighborhood. They weren't down with that. And it was finally called in, I think, multiple times, but for sure it was at least called in once. And it was towed because of that, because it was abandoned. People don't like abandoned vehicles on their streets. So they have, law enforcement has so much backtracking to do, so much to do to get to the bottom of this. And that's why it's taking a while between her being missing and all this digital information they're going to have to go through, all the vehicle data, all the data from cameras that are in and around this neighborhood, Ring cameras, street cameras. Oh my gosh, it's a lot. It's a lot. And what I always explain is you have one bite at the apple. Typically, you have one chance to make your case. Now, many say, yeah, but look at the probable cause here. And that's the only standard for making an arrest, is probable cause. And that is so very true. But a prosecutor in a high profile case like this, I know I've been complaining it's not high profile enough, but believe me, if he's arrested, it's going to really blow up. He knows that he wants this case proved beyond a reasonable doubt in his view. Prosecutors, like I've said this before, whales in a bucket. What's a whale in a bucket? Well, we bring cases that are minnows in a bucket. We believe the person's guilty. We have a lot of evidence, but it's not the totality of all the evidence that a prosecutor might want. Those are cases I call whale in a bucket. That's when your prosecutor says, yeah, Jen, perfect. I love this case. There's no issues. There's no loopholes. The police work was good. The digital information's good. Oh my gosh, we got DNA on the body. How about that? What about if they find, you know, DNA over and in and around throughout that trunk? You know, they're waiting on all of that. Did he have help? I guarantee if this was him, he had help. That's what I believe. I don't believe he would have commissioned this crime if it is him all by themselves. Just the dismemberment piece alone, it would be unusual for there not to be others involved. Could there not be others involved? Absolutely. I mean, you know what Mark Twain says, two people can keep a secret forever as long as one is dead. And that is so true. It is very unusual for anyone to be able to keep a secret. So if anybody else is involved, my hat's off to them for keeping this secret. If he is the only one involved, and again, I'm not saying he is, I'm just saying the evidence sort of leans that way. If he did do this, it'll come out. I have absolutely no doubt that he will be charged. I want to look at chat, but first I just want to make sure I didn't miss any other details as far as the evidence we have here. Give me just 1 second. I made notes. Usually I do them in my notebook, but this time I did them in my computer, or on my cell phone, I should say. Let's see. I hit on that. And on all that, hit on all that. I think I might have hit on everything. Hit on that. Hit on that. Oh, I did want to talk about really quick what it takes to do a probable cause affidavit. Now, a probable cause affidavit, in other words, to search that residence they searched. A law enforcement officer writes it up based on all the details they know. They take it to the prosecutor, who approves it, who gives it the nod, yeah, this looks good. And then you go and swear before a judge. I've literally knocked on the door and my judge has been in bed, literally sat there in a thing where they were sick in bed, but they were the magistrate judge and they signed these affidavits. They work 24/7, these judges, and you can get to them and they can look everything over. So, and then you swear to it, you raise your hand and you swear to it. And so why I'm telling you this is I'm telling you that not only do they have to believe there would have been evidence of a crime there, they have to say it's there now. So remember, the car was towed on the 3rd. The car, she was found on the 8th. And I believe it was, gosh, I have the exact date, but I believe it was Friday. It might have been Thursday that the search warrant was served. That's a lot of days after. What does this tell me? This tells me that the probable cause still remained fresh enough that they could get a search warrant. So they have other clues. You see what I'm saying? They have all these clues because if not, your PC isn't fresh enough, what they call fresh enough. And I'm sure that that is what happened early on. Why didn't they just go to that residence early on? Probably because they didn't have the probable cause they needed. And they needed witness interviews, digital information, cameras, all of this information, the Tesla information, to be developed so that they could show probable cause enough to go in that residence right then and do it, and still that it was fresh, what we call fresh PC. So they're on it. They're all over this thing. The fact that I didn't bring this up, that David Burke has canceled all of his concerts since all of this broke. Canceled his, you know, European tour. That tells me a lot too, because the people who, I mean, I keep seeing all these other rappers, people in the industry, completely distance themselves. Like, hey, we aren't friends. See where he said we're friends? I watched this the other day. We're not friends, dude. We're not friends. We went to dinner once and there were other people there. Yeah, we hugged it up once. Yeah, whatever. So everyone is really distancing themselves. And remember, when you have an inner circle of friends like this, people talk. And there's definitely, I believe, a sense that he's responsible for this in his group of friends and associates, and certainly in his business realm. You know, managers, producers, the people in charge of these concerts, and they do not want anywhere near this mess. So all of that added together, it's coming, everybody. It's frustrating because it's taking a while. It's so important to keep her name and her face out there. I'll say it for the last time, sorry, because you never know who might know something. So please continue to follow her case. Please continue to care and to read about it, because the more people who watch programs that talk about her, the more that it raises awareness, particularly in mainstream media. You know, if all of a sudden there was a hit I did about this, we call them hits, regarding a guy, I don't know if you guys remember this, I believe it was in Oklahoma, and the guy literally killed these people, I think four guys or something, and then took them to his chop shop and, you know, cut them all up and then threw them in the river. I mean, they were in pieces. I think it was four guys he did that to, killed them, and then I think it was four. And anyway, we did a story on that. It was actually Natasha Zubez and I love Natasha. If you ever get to watch her, she's on News Nation Prime, which is at, I believe, 7 Central to 11 Central now. She has 4 hours Saturday and Sunday, and she's just so smart. She's such a delight. One of my favorite individuals who host the show. She's great. Anyway, I'll never forget, she asked me something like, anywhere on this planet that, because law enforcement wouldn't say that there was foul play. She's like, Jen, is there any place on this, you know, what do you think? I'm like, there's no place on this planet that anybody wouldn't say there was foul play, because it's kind of irritating when law enforcement doesn't just own it. They're being so quiet, right? But my point about this is that particular segment did really, really well. Really, really well. And I remember one time on Chris Cuomo, we did a story about the Kansas City, the three guys that ended up dying. They were literally on this other guy's, the guy that owned the house, on his back porch. One was in the yard, frozen to death for 2 days, a fentanyl drug overdose thing, you know, that I don't believe that individuals thought there was fentanyl in there. I think they thought it was just cocaine. Anyway, the owner of the house was arrested. The drug dealer was arrested. But all that is to say that, again, people watched that. And so the ratings go up. So when people see that ratings go up on particular cases on mainstream media, then they want to do another segment and another segment. So please, particularly I'm talking about not social media, because there's so much garbage out there, but on mainstream media, please watch the channels that are actually, I know News Nation is featuring this and they're going to continue featuring it. But if you watch ABC, I think I saw NBC even had something on it. If you see anything, please watch, please tune in, because that means it'll proliferate. I'm going to look at chat really quick. Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, you know, a lot of people believe that David Burke's responsible. There's a lot there. There's a lot there. And there's so much more that law enforcement has. So let's stand by. Let's wait. Let's make her a Gabby Petito. We should all be caring about this case. I wish we could care about every single case. And I do care about every single case. But this case really sticks out to me because she was only 13, died before she even turned 15. She would have been 15. I believe it was the 7th, but we know she was dead before then because that car was there for 3 weeks. So everybody who's here, I thank you for being on the program. Thanks for supporting the channel. What do they say? Like and subscribe. Until next time, may justice be served for Celeste.
Want to break the case with Jennifer Coffendaffer even more? Then press subscribe right now and join Jen on YouTube. Just search Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer now.
Hi there. My name is Annie Elise, a.k.a. your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialously with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialistly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialistly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialistly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.